Okay, hi everyone. I've been a little sick, so can you hear me okay? Okay, great. So today I'm going to be talking about the characteristics of both patients and clinicians that predict the likelihood of whether a woman will be screened for chlamydia. This is part of a larger project that is intended to evaluate some guidelines around chlamydia screening. I'll get to that later on in the presentation, but right now I'm just going to give you the sort of bigger picture. So we know that chlamydia is not just the most frequently reported sexually transmitted infection, but really the most frequently reported infection of any kind in the United States, and that rates have been increasing every year. Up to 70% of genital chlamydia infections in women are asymptomatic. So left untreated, without routine screening, these lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, ectopic pregnancy, and infertility. So this is a serious problem. Chlamydia is higher among certain populations, so really we're talking about health disparities in terms of sexually transmitted infection outcomes. Women between the ages of 20 and 24 and 15 and 19, specifically 18, then 19, and 20-year-olds have the highest rates of chlamydia prevalence. It's higher among non-white women and non-Hispanic Latino women, so 7 times higher in black women, 4 times higher in American Indian women, and 2.4 times higher in Hispanic and Latino women. Of all individuals, not just women. But certainly we're measuring more in women than in men. And it's more cases are reported in metropolitan and statistical areas, so we are also talking about an urbanicity issue. So in 2007, the United States Preventative Service Task Force issued what they consider an A-level recommendation. So this is the highest level put forth by the USPSTF, saying that all sexually active women 24 and younger and older non-pregnant women who are at increased risk be screened for chlamydia. And they didn't specify how often the screening should be conducted, but the CDC stipulates that this should be done annually. Recently, in September of 2014, they downgraded this to a B-level recommendation. But up until this, it's been an A-level recommendation, and actually they were in the process of rewriting the guidelines to include men to be screened and to be screened routinely. I'm not sure where that's standing now that they've downgraded it to a B. And then finally, it's estimated that over 50% of the women who are targeted for chlamydia screenings are not routinely screened. So, despite this, right, despite the fact that clinicians are being strongly encouraged to perform chlamydia screenings by the CDC and by the United States Preventative Service Task Force, we know that a large number of women in these at-risk populations are not being screened. And this is often related to clinician decision-making. So, previous studies have found that clinicians will often not recommend chlamydia screenings to their patients for fear of offending their patients and for fear of causing their patients anxiety, especially if patients are in their office for a reason that is not related to their sexual health. In the United States, we found that clinicians are less likely to provide STI tests if they're unaware of the guidelines, that there is some difficulty of use or of achieving patient compliance. We know that women are more likely to screen for STIs, that specialties, specifically OBGYNs, are more likely to screen for STIs, that the type of screening is related to how often it will be prescribed, such that clinicians are more likely to prescribe if they have access to urine-based samples rather than vaginal swabs. And finally, years of practice is also related to whether or not someone is likely to be screened. So if someone has been practicing medicine for 10 years or less, they're more likely to prescribe an STI screen, specifically chlamydia. So this is a matter of both patient-side access and clinician decision-making, policy adherence, right? Clinicians aren't automatons. They don't prescribe in perfect accordance with the guidelines. They do engage in processes that are related to who they are and who their clients are. So the purpose of this study was to explore which of these characteristics are related to the decision making and will predict the likelihood of whether a woman will be screened for chlamydia or not. So in order to do this, we utilized the Eisenberg model of physician decision-making, which comes out of Great Britain, and I believe it was the 1960s. But it just essentially is helping us conceptualize what is tied to whether or not a clinician will engage in a certain practice. So we know that there are physician characteristics such as their specialty, their socioeconomic status, and then some sort of interpersonal dynamics that I'm not going to get into. Patient characteristics, for instance, race, age, gender, where the physician is in terms of the healthcare system, are they at a private or group practice? And then physician and patient relationships. So is the physician the primary care provider? Have they seen each other before? So all of these things are tied into clinician decision making. So our data comes from the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey, which is a large survey conducted in... Sorry, I've lost my place. So here we go. Okay. A large federally funded survey that takes place outside of federally funded practices. And we used 2005 through 2010 because 2005 is the first year that NAMPS started collecting data on chlamydia, and 2010 is the last year that they've published their data set. And typically it's published every year available on the CDC's website, and it hasn't been published since 2010. So we're investigating reports of chlamydia screens by the participating clinicians among all women in the data set. And we performed a multivariate logistic regression with fixed year effects using Stata. Our unweighted sample was 103,000, and after the sample weights were applied, we had over 3 million women in the sample. So in terms of operationalizing our variables, you know, obviously the dependent variable was whether or not a woman was screened for chlamydia. And following the Eisenberg model, in order to look at the clinician characteristics, we looked at their specialty, whether or not they were a primary care provider, such as a pediatrician, an internist, a general practitioner, whether they were an OBGYN, or whether they were another type of specialty clinician. Patient characteristics were age, race, ethnicity, and method of payment. So were they paying out of pocket? Were they using private insurance? Were they paying with Medicare? Clinician healthcare interaction. So was this a group or private office? Was this an HMO? Was it in an MSA? And then had the patient seen this clinician before? And was this provider or a clinician in the provider's group the patient's primary clinician? So these are how we operationalized the Eisenberg model. So out of our sample, 0.8 women received a chlamydia screen. And you can see that while most of the people in our sample were seen by primary care providers, they were screened by OBGYNs. And you can see that the majority of the women in our sample were over the age of 45. Most of the women who were screened for chlamydia were between the ages of 20 and 24, and the mean age of our sample was actually 45. The mean age of women screened was 29. Okay, so the majority of participants both seen and screened were white, but they were screened disproportionate to their race. So 0.6% of white women were screened, whereas nearly 2% of black women were screened, 1.25% of women of other races were screened, and 1.25% of Hispanic and Latino women were screened for chlamydia. Okay, so according to our model, OBGYNs were nearly four times more likely to screen for chlamydia than primary care providers, and all other specialties were 95% less likely than primary care providers to screen for chlamydia. And then you can see down here at the bottom, race and ethnicity. Black women were 2.5 times more likely to be screened. Women of other races, so all other non-white women, were 1.7 times more likely to be screened, and Hispanic and Latino women were 1.4 times more likely to be screened. So in terms of sources of payment, there was no significance. For clinician and healthcare interaction, there was one significant result, and it was that women who attend a private office or private or group office or seeing someone who's a part of an HMO are less likely to be screened than women who are seeing someone elsewhere. This could be a family planning clinic. We're not sure because of the way that NAMPS collects that data. And also for clinician-patient relationship, if the woman had been seen by that provider before, she was 2.28 times more likely to be screened for chlamydia. And I'm going to leave the year effects out because we're not really talking about looking at policy adherence necessarily or evaluating the policy. So we can see that policy adherence is low. We can see that chlamydia screenings are distributed unevenly across the population. So non-white and Hispanic Latina are overwhelmingly more likely to be screened for chlamydia than white women. So we know from previous research that specialty is likely to impact whether or not a woman will be screened. We found that it was, that it's holding true now. And that whether or not there is an existing relationship between a clinician and the patient will also play a role in whether or not she's likely to be screened. So some limitations. Previous studies that have utilized the Eisenberg model and have also looked at NAMPS note that there is some potential for recall bias, right? This is just part and parcel of what we're doing here. Unfortunately, there was no item to measure whether or not a woman was sexually active in NAMPS. NAMPS is very much about the provision of ambulatory medical care. So we don't know a lot about the patients or the clinicians. But we do know from nationally representative data about women's sexuality that 86% of women report engaging in any penile vaginal intercourse in the last year. So we can see that a number of women are at risk and are not being screened. Also, the NAMPS doesn't allow for us to look at whether or not these people are coming in from family planning or STI clinics or from county health departments, which is one thing that we can look at in the future using other kinds of data sets. And again, there was not a lot of data about who these physicians were. And so I think that we need to know more about who the physicians are and the relationships between whether or not physicians and clinicians have similar identities and what role that might play in terms of whether or not a woman will be screened for chlamydia. So I think what's going on here is that it's not simply enough to target the at-risk populations, but we need to be engaging in provider education. So we know that if a provider is aware of the guidelines, has been trained in STI testing, they're more likely to provide. And we have such low rates of issuing chlamydia tests that this is really an opportunity for us to do provider education. And we know that provider specialty is important. So finding ways of reaching providers who might not necessarily be comfortable dealing with issues related to the vagina might be a way for us to get higher rates of testing. So one way of doing this is by promoting alternative screening methods. There's a growing body of literature out there indicating that self-collected samples are acceptable to women and that women will swab themselves and that there is a high degree of accuracy here. So clinicians who are perhaps not trained in STIs or familiar with the guidelines might still be able to encourage women to self-collect if they have that opportunity in their own office. So. Okay, thanks.